you could turn safe search back on the computer now, Jay, and get off those pictures of Jennifer Lawrence, please. For once, for once.
They're not even that good. They're disappointing.
I wouldn't know.
No, neither would I, but I hear they're disappointing.
The ones on the chair looking back. Did someone else take that, or did she...
Yeah, who?
Yeah, so I think someone else... Anyway. I'm getting distracted again. Let's get into this. Hands in, are you ready for this, boys?
Yeah.
Podcast, week two of the season. Season two, episode three. Pod on three. One, two, three.
Pod.
We have got another mammoth Egg Chasers Rugby podcast. Thank you very much for listening, downloading. Why don't you subscribe and then you don't have to think about actually searching for it and all the rest of it. We'll just make sure it's delivered straight to you. That's what a lot of people have been doing this last week. We've been seeing the stats, and thank you and welcome if you're a brand new listener to the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast. And thank you very much as well for all the comments and feedback, and we'll do our best to shape the podcast to make it one you want to listen to. So iTunes, if you give us your feedback and comments and give it a rating, that'd be much appreciated. I'm Tim, he's JB.
Good day, Tim.
And that is Phil.
Hi, Tim.
Oh man, what another weekend of rugby.
Yeah,
indeed.
It's just getting better, isn't it?
Yeah, and Gloucester won.
Incredible.
And what did we say last week? We said the most entertaining game and one of the most intriguing would be Sale Gloucester.
That was our match of the week. That was our match up of the weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Last week. We know a little bit about rugby anyway, a little bit. But we don't take it or ourselves too seriously. We're just here to chat about rugby, the game we all love. And let's get cracking with that then. I want to find out what your pick of the weekend was.
Wasps Northampton.
Talk to me about Wasps Northampton.
I managed to watch the whole thing live on my BT Sport app, which I finally got working today, and I watched it in the bath.
Which you tweeted on our Twitter account.
Indeed. Fantastic.
Bit of private time for JB with you and Ashley, you and your favourite back row in rugby.
Oh, what a back row. They are mega. At one point, Haskell picked up Hartley at full charge and just lifted him into touch. That's when the deadlift really counts. It was kind of like 60 minutes of real hard graft for Wasps, real, real impressive defence. And in the end, it paid off with two very, 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 very quick tries back to back. And then Northampton just couldn't quite get back in the game. The Wasps' work rate is awesome. Their back row is awesome.
Their second row?
Oh, Gaskell. Yeah, yeah. Gaskell and Launchbury. Awesome.
Gaskell has been kind of an inspired sign-in because he was always a bit lightweight at Sale.
I'll stop the music now. That was just for JB talking about the back row, the Brokeback Mountain music. Sorry, go on, Phil.
Yeah, Gaskell was always very, very talented, a little bit lightweight, but he looks like he's bulked up by, I don't know how much. I'd love to see the stats, 10 kilograms.
Hang around with Haskell.
Yeah. But listen, in pre-season we talked about this, that actually would Wasps be a great move for Gaskell from the point, and I know full well from having spoken to a lot of them, that Sale Sharks fans were gutted to see him go, absolutely gutted.
Rightly so.
But we did say Wasps, of all the teams, value physical development more so than any other team.
More so than Saracens?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Saracens are big into that.
It's part of the Wasp culture, isn't it? Just about the physical fitness. The
Wasps have got like a gym in a porter cabin somewhere. Have you seen their gym?
Yeah.
It's not impressive.
It's all spit and sawdust stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've seen the gym a little bit less than Andy Goode has seen the Wasps' gym.
Yes, exactly.
But like you say, Gaskell has added a few kgs, but do you know what? He had a great season last year for Sale, but his position isn't number eight. It's great that he can play there or blindside, but second row is where
he looked ungainly at eight sometimes. He didn't look very
sometimes
controlled.
He's never going to kind of explode off the base.
Well, here's a prediction for you. I think Haskell is in with a serious shout at a regular England starting berth now.
Starting berth.
I'm not having that.
I thought he was so good.
I'm not having that at all.
Wait and see.
He's been
hear me now, believe me later.
He's been consistently in and around the England squad, but only ever starting when there's like injuries and people unavailable.
He's seen as a bit of a joke, and I mean that because he's always on TV. He's got so many other interests. He's fairly outspoken but he's fairly jovial. But it seems for whatever reason it is, now he's got the captaincy, he just has knuckled down and he looks great. Last year, I think he might have been the top tackler in the Premiership.
Yeah, I think he was.
And this is a Premiership which includes Jack Berger.
Wow.
Fact.
That's a great fact.
Yeah, so he's not to be messed with.
I don't think he's a seven.
Don't think you need a seven.
How many teams have a true seven?
Australia.
Australia, probably the only one at the moment.
Would you not class Richie McCaw as a seven?
Yes.
I would. And Bruce, and if Brousseau is playing, he's not playing for South Africa at the minute. But
no, Francois Lowe is South Africa, isn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah, exactly.
I'll admit the breakdown laws mean that an out and out seven is less of an advantage.
Is there a massive difference between a low type seven and a Haskell type seven?
No.
You know, it's not...
But on the flip side, would you not think maybe Will Fraser is pushing a case just as much as Haskell, albeit we've only seen a couple of games of the season?
Yeah.
Yes.
And fair play, you did talk about it last week. Will Fraser, watch out.
Yeah. And after two games, well, he got man of the match this week, and he played very well last week as well.
And he was all over the ball on the floor. And he's like a real good seven, like Stefan Armitage and real good sevens you see. They're like limpets. They just manage to suck onto the ball
exactly.
and can't get hit off it.
Yeah.
Here's a weird one. Jackson Ray. What to do with Jackson Ray? Because he keeps playing well in the most unimpressive way possible.
What do you mean?
Well, like, you watch him play, and you're, oh God, he's had a good game. Last game of the season, he got two or three tries. But then you watch him, he doesn't stand out. I wonder if he's just a product of the system, and if he's like a cog which just fits into the Saracens Borg mechanism, or if actually he's just a really good player. I don't know which one it is.
I'd say he's that in the forwards. Chris Wiles is that in the backs. You can slot him in here, you can slot him in there. He'll never let you down. He'll do a good job, but he's never going to be a starting first choice.
Yeah, I'd go with that. And Jackson Ray may get some Saxons appearances at some point, but I can't see him ever making that big step up to the main squad.
But he'll get a lot of Premiership appearances.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But let's talk about that, because I happen to know that Quinn Sarries was your pick of the week, Phil.
It certainly was. And it's my pick of the week, surprisingly, not Saracens attack for a team that scored 39 points. It's Saracens defence that was my pick of the week.
Yeah.
Because...
Incredible.
Their forward pack had only two players who started the two finals last year. They made six changes in that starting forward pack. But they were just completely dominant over Quinn's. And even late on in the game, second half, when Quinn's had a load of penalties on Saracens' line, Saracens had a man in the bin. And Quinns were kicking for the corner and driving maul. Saracens had another man put in the bin. Harlequins had Jack Clifford in the centre. So Harlequins had nine forwards on the pitch. Saracens only had seven.
Yeah.
And they couldn't get over the line. The defence was just astonishing.
You shall not pass!
Nice.
It was. And this is a team that's got how many players to come back in?
I think, though, Phil's being a little bit disingenuous here. Because one of the yellow cards was for Charlie Hodgson. So actually improved the defence for 10 minutes.
That 10 channel really tightened up after that, didn't it?
He just can't get anywhere.
Did you see Charlie Hodgson in the when he was chatting afterwards, when he came over to Craig Doyle and I forget who else it was, Lawrence Dallaglio and someone else. But Charlie Hodgson was stood right next to Lawrence Dallaglio. And I know Lawrence Dallaglio isn't in the shape he was when he was an England player now. He's
big, though, isn't he?
He's still big. He's a big frame and a big unit, but he's slimmed right down with a lot of cycling and stuff that he does now. Charlie Hodgson next to him looked stacked.
He looked really
big.
I was saying this. Charlie Hodgson looks massive.
Yeah, he does look massive.
At the moment. The other thing I was saying about Quinns is they've employed Deloitte, the financial
service. Sorry, you mean Saracens.
Thank you, Saracens. They've employed Deloitte to analyse all their data. So they've got an analyst who looks at their game, their team performance, and they build up a plan around that. But now they've been looking at the other teams and then building the plan around the teams. And this analyst, some piece about him in the Times, was saying that his best ever bit of work was the dismantling of Clermont. It was all based on the intelligence of what Clermont did.
Well, they're dismantling the defence... just completely nullified.
Did you see the lineup?
All the positives. Where they weren't competing. Yeah, I did see that.
I hate that. I hate it so much. There should be a rule that you can just do that.
What, you can just march forward?
Yeah.
If no one engages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I've done that in fact, when we were playing together in Broughton Park, and there was a team that did that to us, and I just ran round the back, took the ball out the back and passed to our fly half.
Yeah.
And their team were like, you can't do that. But no,
you can.
If you haven't engaged, you can. You can just run around the back.
Oh,
it's open play.
Let me just work this out.
Alternatively, so either if they set a wedge and the defending team at a line out don't engage and just stand off, there's one or two things that can happen. One, either someone from the defending team can just run right around the back.
Yeah.
enter from the rear, grab the ball, and off they go. Or if someone then does engage,
yes,
it's an instant penalty offside because you're blocking obstruction. Once it's already set with the ball at the back, that is.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, fine.
But anyway, it's a bit complicated. But
It is. It's far too complex for me. I don't like rules.
I was only having a conversation today when someone was saying, I quite like rugby and I quite like rugby players. And they were thinking about their son playing it. And I just don't get it. And actually, conversations like we've just had are the reason why.
Exactly the reason.
People get put off rugby sometimes.
Yeah, no, the reason people will get put off rugby is because I watch something like Northampton versus Wasps and they'll see who got yellow carded. Ashley Johnson got yellow carded and Corbett Sierra got yellow carded after getting hammered again, and the reason was it was a line out that came down. Johnson cleared out Corpus Sierra
with his big rump.
Oh, he's such a strong man, he just destroyed him. And then on the floor, Corpus Sierra retaliates, but he doesn't hit him, he almost like hugs him. But because he used an open hand, he came around the back of his head, pulled him down. Yellow card. Who is that benefiting?
Yeah,
I mean, none of the teams benefit.
Did you see the Nicky Gnieva yellow card? It was a high tackle, using inverted commas.
How dare you use inverted commas? This is your doing.
Because he hit him hard on the chest.
Oh, I hate this so much.
It slipped. He might have just like brushed the underside of his chin.
How dare they ruin our game? How dare they?
Incidentally, on this one, I can't remember if it was last week, and we didn't mention this on last week's podcast, Richard Hibbard diving.
Oh, yes.
We didn't mention it, and it's an absolute disgrace.
That was bad. When Hartley just, it was like shoulder to chest. Hartley leaned in, but there was no contact at all, nothing to of no, and Hibbard threw himself on the floor like he'd been punched in the head.
We had such a packed podcast full of content last week that we managed to miss that one, and Richard Hibbard, you should have been hanging your head in shame. But Gloucester bounced back with a victory against Sale Sharks, and we did pick that one as our game of the round from this weekend. It turned out to be so. Sale had a 17-6 half-time advantage. They'll be disappointed to let that slip.
And apparently Cipriani was awesome.
Cipriani was star man. Sale scored 4 tries, so they got two losing bonus points, whereas Gloucester only scored 3 tries.
And we had a man crying as well.
A man crying?
A man cried on the pitch.
Who?
Any guesses?
James Simpson Daniel.
It was James Simpson Daniel. Oh. He gave his leaving speech. So, very, very sad.
14 years at Gloucester.
I know.
Yeah. It's a shame to...
Such a waste of an English talent. If only he was Welsh. Him and Ryan Lamb.
Right. You were talking about the statistical thing that Saracens were using.
Yes.
That's quite an American approach, isn't it?
It is. Here's my interpretation of this. This is why salary caps work and why you don't see it in football. Because they've only got, say, they've got 5 million to play with. They need to eke out every possible advantage they can get. Which is why they start going crazy and employing people like, I think his name's Dr. Morrow. Who is the sports...
Sorry, are you high and just made that up?
Dr. Morrow.
Dr. Morrow learnt at the knee of Billy Bean. Gets even better, eh? Billy Bean's a real person. For people that know who Billy Bean is, he's the guy from Moneyball for the Oakland A's. So it's one of his disciples. Now, if you're familiar with Moneyball, it's all about statistical approaches and, you know, making...
How's John Aubergine getting on these days?
See ya?
How's John Aubergine doing these days?
Yeah. Okay, actually. Danny Zucchini. So because of the salary cap, they're looking for all these weird and wonderful ways to improve what they do. And that's why it works.
Yeah.
And that's why I love the salary cap approach.
Well, I think this brings us on to this kind of... You mentioned Billy Bean and baseball and how it's quite an American approach. And there's something which Phil's heard about, which I think we need to talk about.
Yes. So in Australia at the moment, in the National Rugby Championship, whatever it is called, the low level, they're trialling some new rules, one of which is decreasing the value of penalties and increasing the value of conversions. But another one that they're not trying at the moment but has been muted is a 3-point scoring play when you score a try. So you score a try, you have an option to take a 2-point conversion or a 3-point additional play that would be from either a scrum or a tap and go on the 22, and you can get an extra just one extra point for doing that, which is very similar to NFL.
If you don't know American football, it's 6 points for a touchdown, and then you get the 1 point conversion in front of the sticks, or you can go for eight, but you have to do that with a play that isn't a kick.
Now,
get into the end zone.
I don't think this is as ridiculous as people think.
Well, I'm going to put you on the clock. So we're going to debate. Oh, we're going to debate this in 2 minutes and 2 minutes only, and then we've got to come to a decision about what we think. Go, Jay.
History time, gentlemen. Try was originally meant to mean that you could try to have a kick.
Yep.
So I don't think it's that ludicrous that a try now means that you can now go and have a try to have another try. So it's the logical progression.
But what about the fact that the two games, whilst there are similarities, an egg-shaped ball and lots of physical contact, they're not the same, and rugby is phases of play, whereas NFL is individual plays which have a start and have an end. You could play for 10 minutes. That would be my concern. Phil?
Yes, and that would be a concern, but I still think... by making it only 1 point, it means that it'll be used very rarely, and it will be used in times when the end of a game, when you're 8 points down, you go for that play because you can potentially win. It'll create much more drama and tension.
JB?
Not only do I want to include this, I also want the referees to throw flags instead of use a whistle. I want the referee to be challenged like they are in the NFL.
By coaches?
Yes, I want a coach challenge. Actually, I don't know why we just don't wear helmets too. I think it'd be great.
Well, that's going slightly off topic. I'm just going to come back to and kind of reiterate the same point I made a moment ago. What would happen is you could score a try and then you could take a tap and go from the 22. 10 minutes later, you could potentially be in the same phase of play. That, after each try, you're going to be completely confused about where you are in the game, what is going on. Because it's multiple phases, I'm not sure you can do it. What do you reckon? Surely that's got to be an issue.
Well, you know what? Let's go from big to small, hey? Let's get rid of the knock-on before we start adding extra points.
I think you'd either have to put a two-minute time limit on it, or what's been proposed is... as soon as it's knocked on, ball kicked out of play, there's any change in the who has possession of the ball or anything like that, it immediately stops and you go back to a restart like you normally would.
I
completely agree with your point. You see times, particularly at the end of the game where it's very close, where you do have 10 minutes...
Pick and go.
So, yeah, it's... If you try to create more excitement, but it's...
And could you limit the number of phases? I don't know whether that would be a kind of rugby way to go.
That's
sort of,
I think 2 minutes is quite a good way. I do like the fact that it's only one additional point.
Yeah.
So you would, because of the risk...
Yeah, you wouldn't...
You would only use it, like, was it England-New Zealand, where England ended up losing by 1 point? They scored a try with a minute to go. They took the kick as fast as they could to, like, make sure they could get the restart, but then... This would have created...
Imagine.
2 minutes on the clock to score.
Oh, it would have been a great spectacle, amazing spectacle. But on the flip side, we were just talking about how two outsiders... And again, we're trying to grow the game, and you guys are going to Chicago in a few weeks to watch USA New Zealand.
Apparently.
It would just be another barrier for people not to understand what the hell's going on and why.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Maybe.
Possibly. But I'm all for...
I have a question for...
Novel ideas.
You two, but I know you don't know the answer. So I'll open it up to the podcast listeners. Find out who proposes these law changes, because they need to get
hold
of...
Is it the IRB?
I don't know, but there must be
it's got to be someone...
Within the IRB.
Because I would love to see your knock-on rule trialled.
Yes.
And again, if you need to listen back to a previous podcast. Me and Phil at first thought JB was completely bonkers, but more explanation, and it kind of makes a little bit of sense. What would it be like if there was no knock-on in rugby? And it's
it would be more open, be more fluid,
less
game.
Scrums.
Yeah,
that's not necessarily an advantage, though.
But that does make it easier for people to understand.
And it makes less scrummaging. I mean, less scrummaging is a safer game.
I'm not saying it would make it a better game, but I'm saying I would love to see what happened. And again, if it's the first time you've heard anyone suggest it, it seems like a totally bonkers idea.
Smaller players seems very, very sensible. I mean, I played this weekend, and I came on at flank, which is unusual for me because I've been playing in front row. I was the only back sub and I came on at six. At 6 and 8, I played all weekend. But anyway, the point was, the scrums are actually a bit of a rest. You know, you'd have to be considerably fitter if there were less scrums.
They are if you're a flanker, maybe more so than if you're front row.
Yeah. Do you reckon David Wilson rests while the scrums are going on, or for the rest of the time?
I'm not sure which one Kyle Sinclair does.
His face at the end of that match...
He got smashed
by a guy 2 years ago who was playing for Jersey.
Exactly. Yeah.
As you would say, Jay, he got taken to the woodshed.
For some 2x4.
For some 2x4.
I'm not sure if he's a really talented player who's just not quite fulfilling his potential, or if he's just not very good.
Well, you've got an interesting point, JB, about the Quinns pack and the Sarries pack from Friday night's game. But we'll get into that in just a minute. After a little light interlude, I reckon. And just a quick heads up, it's at Rugby Podcast. You can find us on Twitter. And last week we were saying that we hope to have Jeb Sinclair on today's podcast. But he is currently, as we record this, on a plane heading back from Newcastle to London after London Irish's victory against Newcastle at Kingston Park. And that means we can't talk to him, but it's definitely on for next Sunday. Potentially, he's going to be inducted into Banter Squad. along with Nick Cummins, Joe Marler, and Donico O'Callaghan and Nigel Owens. But we mentioned it last week, James Haskell is buying a one-way ticket into Banter Squadron, and in the last week...
He's definitely circling his Spitfire around Banter Squadron airfield.
It is. It's almost like he heard us talking about his potential entry into Banter Squadron, because we recorded it on Sunday evening. We were like, James Haskell, he's getting close to Banter Squadron. Monday morning, and James Haskell is tweeting, check this out, I'm on a brand new Don't Drop the Egg.
I love that. I absolutely love it.
Which, if you've not... I mean, it's only had 784 views on YouTube, which is a disgrace.
What, the new one?
The new one. You need to go and look at it, basically. We will tweet it out at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. But it's Don't Drop the Egg. Now, I don't know who these guys are that make it, but...
I think they went to school with Benders.
Benders!
I absolutely love that.
It's all about who you know, isn't it? Anyway, so they made this little kind of fake documentary video thing, and James Haskell features in it, and let's just enjoy a little snippet of it. This is arriving at James Haskell's house.
Hello, mate. It's James Haskell.
Haskers!
All right, Haskell.
Hello, mate.
All right. Oh, you smell real good. Mate, you're so strong.
James.
Rob Shaw, captain, won't let me play, stealing my life. Haven't shanked a bird in a year. Let me just say that.
No, I haven't.
I live in a gym.
That's some people's dreams.
That's a nightmare. Yeah. Honestly, it's a nightmare, right? I haven't got a kitchen.
Yes, you do?
No, no, that's a speaker.
Oh, yeah.
No bed, wooden floor.
Got your name on it.
I've hit rock bottom. Lancaster doesn't call me. I've got no friends.
He's very self-deprecating. He's a bit of a natural. He's going to have a long career after rugby, is Haskell.
I think so.
He's got some top banter. So next week for Jeb Sinclair, and maybe a future inductee into Banter Squadron, James
really
Haskell.
We should really get a compilation of all the best bits of Johnny Wilkinson's interviews and try and get him into Banter Squadron. It would be the funniest thing that we've ever done. I like protein.
Oh my goodness, have you seen Haskell? His warm-up. Have you seen the picture on Twitter of his warm-up?
No, I have no idea.
James Haskell was retweeted it an hour ago.
Let's see then.
And it's someone called Vicky Crow, who said the highlight of today, and that's referring to the Wasps-Northampton match, was definitely James Haskell handstanding during warm-up.
Let's have a look.
Serious talent, techers. And then look, this is James Haskell in his warm-up.
That's easy enough.
Oh yeah, do I just do it now?
Go on, Jay. Just do it now.
Actually, just do it now.
Go on then. Go on then. Just okay. Shall I just get a video of it?
Guess I will.
Hold on. So you're showing how easy it was of James Haskell to have done that. Just put it onto video mode and then record JB.
Ready?
Yeah. Go on.
God, I've not done this for a while.
Whoa. Oh, hello.
That hurts.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah.
Fine.
If I can do it, I'm a prop. There you go. Damn, that hurt my toes up.
Is that jiu-jitsu?
Yeah.
That's quite impressive, that. Is he doing that because it's a genuine warm-up, or is he doing that just so he can show everyone at the...
Show off.
You reckon?
Yeah.
And he's 7 seconds ago, James Haskell has just tweeted a picture of his Domino's Hawaiian pizza. That's his post-match nutrition.
He doesn't eat that.
He's not eating it.
That's his, I'm guessing, that's his, like, we've just won cheat meal.
Nah, not
he's got it off. That's the bus driver's.
So, it's Andy Goode's.
That's what he's saying. It's hard to believe.
I did read an interview with him the other day. He got asked if he wants KFC or McDonald's, and he said he prefers McDonald's.
Wow.
If he's feeling naughty.
So naughty.
So naughty.
So naughty. JB, let's go back to Friday night's annihilation of Quinns by Saracens and an interesting observation.
Yes. So, I know this is very Quinns heavy now, but I kind of thought, watching Saracens, How good are they really? Are they really very good? Or are Quinns just falling to pieces? So I decided to have a look at the Quinns team, who they played, and I thought I'd look at the Quinns team that won the league a few years ago. And you'll be surprised to hear there's only six changes. So that's Saracens
from
team.
From the whole team?
From starting 15.
Yeah.
So the wings would have been different, because you obviously didn't have Yard and Lindsay Hague-Young.
Yeah.
They had Ollie Cohn playing instead of Charlie Matthews. Mm-hmm. And they had the big, is it Samoan?
Fa'asavalu.
Yeah, him. But now you've got Matt Harper, who...
Luke Wallace.
Luke Wallace, who everyone loves. And of course, there's also Cal Sinclair. But actually, it's the core of a team.
Sinclair, would it have been Johnson?
Yes.
James Johnson.
Correct. Yeah.
So what you've got is this Quinns team, which 3 years ago, everyone was saying, not only are they champions, they're really young and they're only going to get better. But maybe from the evidence that we saw this time round, they've not. They've actually regressed.
Well, do you know what? Let's pick up on two of the players that were in the Quinns pack that you just mentioned when they won. Between them would be 40 stone.
More than 40 stone.
Yeah. Ollie Cohn and James Johnson. And in their place, a very promising but very young, and he got schooled by another youngster, Kyle Sinclair, and Charlie Matthews. You're trading 40-plus stone worth of just ugly brute.
Ollie Cohn was never a great player, no, player anyway.
Ollie Cohn was important for that Quinns pack.
Yeah.
Because he did a lot of work that allows other players to play in the way that they play.
The other thing with that performance, I don't think Quinns will get beaten like that at all again this season. I think Saracens had really done their homework, as you were saying, with the stats thing. And the way that they defended was very interesting. It's the way they did against Clermont last year, because they know Harlequins play that offloading game. Mm-hmm. So they were just throwing one man into the ruck, which was often Will Fraser, who's very good at it. But besides that, they were just getting guards in immediately, not competing the ruck, just let them have the ball, guards in to stop that dangerous offloading and the quick... It allows them quick ball, but it nullifies the effect of the quick ball, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does.
And they did that brilliantly.
Yeah. And what I noticed to add to that, Phil, is they were really good at identifying when it was on to throw more bodies in. So when someone put in a massive hit and hit them back behind the game line, then all of a sudden you'd have 3-4 Saracens players flying in, taking the chance when it was on, which just is really well-coached, intelligent players.
The Wolfpack mentality, the defence on the line.
Let me talk about the Wolfpack mentality for just a minute, because I came by some information. I've just come from a christening in Watford, and a lot of the people that were there live in St Albans.
Oh, yes.
St Albans is kind of the heartland of Saracens.
It is, yeah. It's where they train.
And it's also near the hotel where the England squad train. The Grove, is it? The England squad, quite often before Twickenham matches, they'll spend the night. They'll train at the Grove.
Right, yeah. Okay.
And that's also the place where an England player, part of the Wolfpack, had a wedding.
Ooh.
And I heard some stories about that wedding.
Please tell us.
I did see on Twitter that Chris Ashton got married over the summer. Coincidentally,
no,
perhaps.
No comment. But I suppose I need to be careful of defamation.
Just tell us, Tim.
I need to be careful of defamation. I need to be careful.
Do you want to tell me and I'll tell them?
No. All I can say is there probably weren't dwarfs serving drinks.
Wow.
who then late in the evening left because they were being thrown. Probably didn't happen.
What? Did these people not learn?
There probably wasn't the most number of complaints of any event that some of the staff can remember at that venue. There probably wasn't police turning up. And there probably wasn't stories of very, very loud shenanigans going on in bedrooms.
Did Mike Phillips go?
Go to what? I don't know. I'm talking about some hypothetical.
By the way, if you're a dwarf, right, and current England international calls up and says, do you want to come and serve drinks? Don't for a second think they're calling you because they think you're an excellent bartender. That is very far down the list of priorities of the England squad.
Or you do your references and go, hold on, was this one of the England players who was on the World
2011
World Cup?
And it's not like the dwarf community is a large community. I mean, these stories...
No, they're not.
Yeah, I mean, these stories are going to circulate and get around. I wouldn't be that shocked. That's what I'm saying.
Well, anyway, I haven't said anything incriminating because I don't know what the facts are. I've just speculated about what probably didn't happen. Mm. Shall we move on?
Let's do that.
Mm. Shall we move on? Well, actually, while we're on the subject of...
Dwarves?
Yeah, let's talk about Mickey Young. No. Alex Corbisiero, did you see him on rugby tonight?
I've not actually seen it. I couldn't bring myself to watch it.
This was a beautiful thing, and you'd have to go back to 2009 for this.
Keep it kind of quiet. People on a diet. Scrum is straight, term is right. I don't deny it. Test me, try it. Style you don't buy it. I'ma grab the microphone.
That, of course, is something we featured many, many times on the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast. Alex Corbisiero rapping back in his London Irish days. And he said he did it on his England initiation. There's a little clip of him in 2012. With Ben Foden.
The hip hop prop is in the house, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh no! Win some scrums first.
Ball in the hand, just playing for the rose. One more game, grand slam, we must dispose. People looking at us, rose and rose, rose. Here to see the hip hop start to flow, flow. But when I start to flow, you know I'm still the show.
So that's him after playing for England in 2012. And then on Monday night, the new night for the BT Rugby Tonight programme, he did it again. Bear in mind, he was doing this for charity as well. It was a nice touch.
Which charity?
BT Tonight. Here tonight to reach all the highest of heights. I got my man Lewis here and he's shining so bright. And everything come again cause when my body's in sight. I got the London, I got the North, set the plate. I'm just spraying the paint, I'm just bringing the hate. I'm a heavyweight, here to set them straight when I eliminate.
What's the English doing again?
But going to Orlando, me I like my chicken cause I eat a lot of Lando.
Was the laughter more about Nando's references?
Yeah. I love
desperately trying to get a black card, he's called.
That's going to age so badly, that clip.
Bayfield and Dawson like clapping along. I did enjoy that.
I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it a lot, but like you say, it'll be interesting to see what they make of that in like 5 years from now.
Yeah.
Good on him. Right, now, Phil has been working tirelessly. Axe to the grindstone, and this guy spends 3 days of the week travelling to and from Manchester to London. Where he finds the time, I will never know, because when he's not watching rugby or travelling or painting his missus's house, then he's coming up with great stuff like this. So Phil has the list of the best nicknames in rugby.
I've got 9.
Oh, almost the top 10.
Almost the top 10.
So there we go, at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. We need one more that's good enough for the list to complete the top 10, but off you go, Phil.
Okay, wow. So, at number 10, we've got Adam Jones.
Or at number 9.
At number 9, Adam Jones.
I've done this before.
Who is called Heather from EastEnders.
Oh, brilliant!
That's a bona fide nickname. That's awesome.
Yes.
I love it.
It is.
I wouldn't call it to him to his face, but...
He's not going to catch you.
At number 8, he was mentioned by Marlon Yard in a discussion with me. Luke Tarzan Wallace.
Nice.
Yeah, like that.
At number 7, we've got an old school Australian number 9. He was Nick Kicktoo Far Jones. A little bit cheesy.
Where are you getting these from?
very limited research. At number 6, Cannonball Ken Owens.
Better.
I like that. Where's that come from? Just the way he plays.
I guess it must do.
Fair enough.
Another Welsh player, I'd be interested to find out where it comes from, is Luke Longdog Charteris.
Ah, Longdog. I don't know, why is that then? Tim, you met him a few times.
I've played rugby with Luke Charteris at university.
Longdog, what do they mean?
It could be referring to the fact he's 7 foot tall, but tries to pretend he's 6 foot ten. He is easily 7 foot, and I couldn't possibly comment as to what else it could be. Good nickname.
At number 4, another EastEnders character, Nicky Sturt is Minty.
Yep.
Excellent.
I've got 2 rugby league players. I'll go for at number 3. We've got Martin Chariots O'Fire.
Nice.
Excellent.
Chariots is excellent.
Who did play a little bit of rugby union in his time?
Wasps.
At number 2, one of my favourite players, Cuddles.
Cuddles?
It's Jamie Cuddmore.
Man crush.
And then at number 1, I'm going for an Australian rugby league player called Matt Hilder, whose nickname was Waltzing Matt Hilder.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
Now,
that's awesome.
You see, You missed some obvious ones there.
There's just loads of obvious ones.
Well, obviously, there's Mr. 12 Trees.
Yeah,
36.
You missed Tom Voice, the crowbar.
Tom Voice, the crowbar.
Yeah, it's something to do with how he scored tries. Let's get the crowbar in there. Harvey, who was Stefan Armitage.
Why is that?
I don't understand that one.
I don't get that either.
Harvey, that E17 guy.
Maybe it's about Brian Harvey. Did Stefan Armitage run himself over in a car whilst he was eating a baked potato like Brian Harvey? Is that where it comes from?
Wow.
Do you know what? Sometimes when I feel like having a day when it's just one of them days when everything's going wrong and you know what I mean? You're just getting a bit stressed out. I sometimes think about Brian Harvey eating a baked potato, falling out of his own car and running over himself.
It just
makes me so
just
sad. You know what? It's all right.
I watched my dad run himself over.
What? How? What?
We used to have one of the old Montego estate cars and he's trying to jump start it and we've got a hill where our house is. And he slipped out of the car and the car ran over his ankle.
Brian Harvey
ran over his ankle and hit a tree.
Brian Harvey managed to run over his back and head.
Did he really?
Yeah, whilst eating a baked potato.
Wow.
It's something like he'd eaten too many baked potatoes and he lent half his car to be sick. And just went under the back wheels.
Jesus Christ, it's horrific.
So anyway, but to return to the point, that must be why Stephen Armitage got his name. It must be some escapade with a baked potato. It's the only reason I could think he'd be called Harvey.
Well, definitely. Christian Wade missed the match this week because he had a car crash.
Yeah.
Yeah, but luckily he's all right. I'm just trying to think of some other nicknames. Kevin Morgan was the knife because he used to cut lines.
I like that.
That's a pretty good one. There was one for Corey Britton, but I just can't remember
The chiropractor, Brian Lehmer.
Yeah, that's a good one, actually.
That could complete your 10.
Yeah.
And there's got to be more.
There'll be loads more. Yeah, I wrote that very quickly on the train.
We could tell. Yeah.
Thanks, Jim.
Chuck some more in the hat, and then we'll have the proper, definitive top 10 next week.
Victor Meldrew. Who's that?
Richard Hill.
Okay, yeah.
There was loads.
What, the old Saracens in England player or the Bristol and Worcester head coach?
No, the number six. One of the best flankers of all time.
The silent assassin.
Exactly. Yeah, there's loads. I'll think of some more.
Yeah, you do that, Jake.
Yeah.
I'm glad you didn't prepare for the podcast.
Right, let's get into looking ahead. So we've looked backwards, and I appreciate that on this week's particular podcast, it's beyond the scope. Such were the amount of matchups, we couldn't possibly talk in depth about every game. But we're going to look forward and hopefully give your club a bit of attention right now. Let's start with the Pro 12. What I'm really loving is the competitiveness of the games. Did not see that Cardiff Blues defeat to Glasgow. Well, you did, JB. You called, didn't you?
Not
such a comprehensive win.
Exactly.
By Glasgow.
And who'd have thought that Edinburgh would have lost at home to Connacht?
I know.
A lot of injuries for Edinburgh.
Were there after their performance last
week? But to reiterate what we've been saying for a few weeks now is the competitiveness and the players and what's on the line every Pro 12 match is making it an infinitely better competition.
It is very weird caring about the Pro 12.
It's odd. It's a new look for JB, but he's wearing it well.
I did read an article the other day that said this change to the Pro 12 will now nullify the Irish dominance or past dominance in the Heineken Cup because they won't be able to rest players the week before, unless they are considerably further ahead.
They will be able to, because Connacht will never make the Heineken Cup, so don't worry about it. No, it doesn't matter, because, of course,
it's one from each nation.
It's one from each nation, isn't it?
And then the next two or the next three.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So they could. There's every chance.
How did Ulster go? They won, didn't they?
Beat Zebra comfortably. Scored 5 points.
Not emphatically, but comfortably.
Andrew Trimble looked very good.
Did he?
Yeah, really did. He looked awesome last year for Ireland. He looked really good on Friday night.
And you called it again, JB. Not only are you enjoying the Pro 12, you're picking your winners in the Pro 12 because you backed the youngsters of Ospreys to beat the journeymen of the Dragons.
Yep.
Well, what matchup would you go with? Ospreys, Edinburgh.
I probably would
Connacht,
say
Leinster. I
probably would say Cardiff, Ulster, because Cardiff at home again on the back of a bad defeat, they've really got to do something.
Yeah,
and Ulster are a very good team. Very, very good team. Lots of strength and depth. Lots of young talent.
Lots of fine, upstanding supporters.
Yeah. Yes. Very good support.
Sefton sounds like the thing, and you know that you lose when you do too much cocaine.
So let's quickly rattle through this. Munster, they've been, again, not quite as impressive as they have been, but Munster, Zebre, you'd have to say Munster at home, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, both Irish teams still searching for a win.
When are the Italians going to be any good?
Sorry, both Italian teams still searching for a win.
Well, Treviso competed quite well. Connacht, Leinster. Connacht at home off the back of a good victory.
Leinster, very good performance, though, against Scarlets to put 40 points on them.
Yeah, I'll go Leinster.
Yeah, I think Leinster. Leinster should have enough.
Dragons, Glasgow.
You'd have to Glasgow. Back Glasgow again.
You
yeah.
would, wouldn't you?
That'd be three victories for Glasgow if they win that.
Scarlets to beat Treviso at home.
Yes, I'll go for that.
And Ospreys, Edinburgh. I'd probably just edge an 8-0-away win with that one.
Would you? That Ospreys. Depends on the injury front
for Edinburgh.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll go Ospreys. Home victory for Ospreys.
And then our pick of the round, Blues, Cardiff Blues against Ulster. Now, we know what Phil's going to pick, so let's deal with that. He'll pick an Ulster.
Obviously, a fantastic Ulster victory.
Ulster for me.
I'm going to go Ulster. Simple as. Let's move into the Aviva Premiership.
Friday night.
Ah, yes, that's better.
Friday night lights, Gloucester, Exeter.
Yeah.
Exeter. Oh, where are they playing?
At Gloucester.
Exeter.
Exeter, good performance against Leicester.
Yeah, really strong.
Only narrowly lose, and they arguably could have won it if a few other decisions had gone their way. I do like that Exeter team. Gloucester, obviously a good performance against Sale. So, in front of their shed.
Exeter.
Gloucester, I'm going to say.
Exeter.
I'm going to go Gloucester. Into Saturday, Sale London Welsh, regulation. Let's play our game of higher or lower. Will they score more or less than Bath against London Welsh?
Less.
I think it's going to be 25-9 to Sale.
Excellent. I think Sale will get a bonus point victory.
They won't score against Sale, I don't think. I don't think they'll score a try.
Their attack was good. London Welsh's back three look pretty dangerous.
Sale do love a bit of defence, that's fair.
Yeah, true.
Quinn's Wasps.
Quinn's
this is so hard to call because Wasps are a different team.
Wasps, easy. From what I've seen, no, actually, that's not true. I say Wasps easily, but I don't mean that at all because I thought the Quinn's performance was actually very good, just the Saracens was exceptional. But
I did not think Quinn's were good. Jordan Turnhall dropped the ball numerous occasions,
But they've still, they've still got Danny Kerr, they've still got... Yeah, when the injuries happened, that's when it all fell to pieces.
I think they just lost the collision all night.
Yeah.
They looked good in the second half. They had the ball on the Saracens line for 20 minutes and Saris had a man in the bin and they still couldn't score.
That was almost certainly part of the Saris plan there.
It's hard to call because Wasps...
That's a really difficult one. I think
Wasps. I think Wasps are looking very, very strong. They've beefed up their pack. They've beefed up their tight five and they've got some very dangerous outside backs.
Yeah.
And Andy Goode pulling the strings.
I
just worry about the middle of the pack for Quinns. We talked about this before the season started. The middle of the pack, the second row for Quinns, and the middle of the backs, the centres for Quinns. They were two areas we said big question marks over that. I'm not sure they're quite got the
Who
strength
needs
they need.
A second row more, Quinns or Gloucester?
Gloucester.
Probably Gloucester slightly more because Quinns' first two are decent. But they've got no depth at all.
Yeah, I mean, what would happen if Robson was injured?
Yeah.
I don't even know.
Nick Easterwood going
into
the second
Easterwood
row. Like happened last season.
Yeah. Ooh, they need some second rows.
Yes.
They've got some young guys coming through. But I think what Phil said earlier in the podcast is right. The Quinns won't play that badly again. I'm just going to go gut feeling Quinns will nick it.
I think Wasps will continue their very good start to the season. I think Wasps will win.
London Irish Saracens.
It's Saracens.
Saracens. Interesting, like Newcastle, fair play to them. They got a few tries. They scored three tries at home against the Irish, and it was the kicking.
The kicking
that let them down. They didn't convert any tries. Had they have converted one or more, they'd have got at least a draw, possibly a win.
Any Dean Ryan news? As in, has he won a game yet?
Yes, they beat Moseley.
Oh, well done, guys. Last week, Dean Ryan was saying how proud he was to be part of a match as great as the Bristol one. He lost.
I like Dean Ryan. I like him. Right, then Newcastle Northampton on Sunday. Another home match for Newcastle.
Northampton.
Oh, yeah. Saints or Newcastle?
Bath versus Leicester is our tie of the round. It's on Saturday afternoon, 3:15 kickoff at the Rec. It's an old, romantic, historic fixture.
Christ, I wouldn't mind watching that. Do you fancy going to Bath to watch it?
I can't. I'm a sail. Watch, I'm a sail. I'm working at London. I'm working at London Welsh. Just assuming you were going to offer extend the invite. I can't.
I won't be able to afford it, unfortunately. These Chicago tickets have bankrupt me.
You can come to Sale and watch the London Welsh game if you're allowed out.
Yeah, we'll see.
that's to GU, isn't it?
If you've finished your painting, Phil, you can come to
it. Bath Leicester, how do you see this one going?
The packs are both very, very good.
Although, I think Bath will win it.
Leicester's injuries, I think, are taking the toll.
It's so unfortunate for them again.
Yeah.
Carl Ferns looked good.
He looked very good.
And he's in the back row again.
Yeah, he scored a very powerful try. He made a hell of a break for it was where Eastman almost scored.
He came in and Atwood came in and beefed up that pack something.
Yeah, and it's already a big pack.
It's already a pretty beefy pack, as it is.
I think they're going to do stuff this year. I think it's going to be good. This is going to be a defining game for one of those teams.
I think Bath will win it at home. They've got most of their squad, albeit Francois Lowe's obviously not available, Burgess isn't available.
Yeah.
But the majority of the rest of them are playing, whereas Leicester have, again, got injuries. So Bath at home to edge it. Ford to make Leicester wish that they'd kept hold of him.
Exactly what will happen.
Bath victory. I can't see past it. With Anthony Allen back in, it does look, and Matthew Tate, it does look a better Leicester back line.
Yeah, it does.
I think the Bath pack is where the strength is.
Leicester, I'm going to go Leicester. I'm just going to go Leicester.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm looking at Leicester. I think they'll do it. Now, one of the reasons I didn't watch any rugby is because yesterday I took part in Tough Mudder. I hasten to add, I did this because of work. I didn't pay my £140.
I hate Tough Mudder.
Entry fee.
What?
£140.
What would they do if you just jogged around the course next to it?
God, I could get some lovely Loke Brogues for that.
Exactly. Look, you give me £50 and I'll set fire to hay bales in your own garden.
Yeah, yeah. If you're not familiar with Tough Mudder, I was doing it through work. I don't know what to say. I was thinking as I was going round it, I'm missing all that wonderful rugby that I'm missing.
Why didn't you use a BT Sport
I'm missing
app?
The rugby championship matches that we've not even talked about. Yeah. I'm missing the Aviva Premiership matches. And
it's so rubbish, isn't it?
Tough Mudder. My advice would be, if you haven't done Tough Mudder and you've played rugby, don't do it.
This is a sport which requires zero dedication. You can wander around work and tell all the other midwives, exactly how much money you've raised for charity. It is utterly and totally pointless.
Well, I think that's maybe a bit harsh, but what I will say is, and if you don't know what it is, it's basically you run 12 miles around an obstacle course and you, for no particular good reason, you crawl through mud and wade through big mud bogs.
You're going to get muddy, and that's going to be liberating.
And you climb over like big wooden walls and stuff. It's basically, the way I would distill it down is it's exercise and fitness and sport for people that don't like competition, have never experienced competitiveness. Now, I'm all for, I ran the marathon and that was just a battle against myself. I wasn't racing anyone else.
That's actually hard though, isn't it?
But it still had a time on it and it still had like an end outcome. And the worst bit was you jump over this wall and you're all in like this pen. Like you're sheep and you can't go anywhere before the start line. And you're made to kneel down and make a pledge, a Tough Mudder pledge.
That you won't tell anyone how terrible Tough Mudder is.
And then it took 5 hours to get round this 12-mile course.
Now, 5 hours?
I could run 12 miles in...
5 hours of
I could
this
run
hell.
12 miles. I could run 12 miles in probably an hour and three quarters, something like that. And it took me 5 hours to get around it because there's bottlenecks. All these obstacles you come to where you have to wade through mud. And maybe the first one, you have a bit of a crack. But by the third time you're wading through mud, you're like, I'm really a bit... I'm done with this.
Well, I suppose...
And there's a big bottleneck, so you have to stand for waiting for 10 minutes.
People come up to me and they say... Or, in the group of people, they'll tell you how tough Mudder is, because they've run by burning hay bales. Did you have the burning hay bales?
There was no burning hay bales.
And did you have the electrocution bit?
Yeah, the electrocution bit at the end. That's right. Like wires hanging down and you have to run through this 20-metre little stretch where you do get electrocuted. It does hurt a bit.
It's like a little jolt. Yeah. Like, it can't be anything dangerous.
I mean, what I would do is I'd have a few more obstacles. I'd also make it mandatory. So in order to earn the Tough Mudder status, at least 2 in 40 people should die in every event. Just like a ratio. So you know it's good. I think
2 in 40 people's a little bit high, Jay.
I don't think it is.
Here's how I describe Tough Mudder. And I don't want to say you're wrong or silly if you've done it and you enjoyed it. I think great, because it's
don't.
It's physical.
No, you don't.
You don't, Jay.
How can you?
It's physical. It's physical exercise.
No, and it's excuses.
And it's a challenge, and it might be a good thing to do with your friends, a bit of fun, and you raise some money.
Was it fun?
Personally, I hated it. Here's how I describe it. There's a certain group of people who incessantly take pictures of their breakfast and put and decide and then spend 10 minutes deciding what Instagram filter they're going to use before they upload it. This Tough Mudder appeared to me like it was just a little event for people to get a new Facebook profile picture.
Yeah.
If you're going to define your life about it, two in every 40 should die. And I also think that it should be patrolled by a group of well-qualified Marines who could capture people and hold them for 6 months at a time. Just really,
Guantanamo Bay them.
What was that rugby player who you always like to talk about that I always censored you talking about?
Fino Maka.
Fino Maka, just like hiding in a bush, camouflaged.
Why would Fino Maka be there?
Don't know, Jay.
Don't know.
Maybe need to listen to an earlier podcast for that. We'll be back on the next one. In the meantime, at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, get in touch with us. Phil's got a train to catch to get back to London, so we best be off. In a bit.
I've got Broncos Chiefs. Bye. Ha ha ha.